the movement of our fellow human beings. Who are we to judge how people choose to live? ICE is not welcome here, just like the U.S. is not welcome in other countries. And you, our elected officials, should swear them off, if not in policy, then in spirit, to at the very least pay back your undocumented community members for picking your strawberries. No one is illegal. Power to the people.
So that is John Caravello, who is a faculty member at California State University, Channel Islands, where Angel Marie Taylor, you teach. He was arrested the next day. Can we just have 30 seconds? He hasn't been released yet?
No, Professor Caravello hasn't been released. And as you've heard in that public comment, he has always used his voice to speak up for those around him. Myself as a student coming from an immigrant background, like most other students here in CUC Channel Islands, Professor Caravello has been continuously targeted because of his outspoken views to defend his community. And he was one of the protesters on the ground who was helping other protesters amidst the violence.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to cover this. As the judge in Los Angeles ruled that migrants can no longer be rounded up in Los Angeles without cause, Angel Marie Taylor, student and volunteer with 805 Immigrant Coalition, thank you for being with us. And Luis MacArthur, mayor of Oxnard, 10 miles from Camarillo, previously the police commander of Oxnard. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is Maseroth on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Jazz Society of Oregon, presenting the 45th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival. Friday, July 18th through Sunday, July 20th at Cathedral Park under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. Featuring local jazz, blues, soul, and Latin artists such as the Revival Brothers Band, McTuff, Tezetta Band, and more. More information at jazzorgan.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, LGBTQ-friendly bishop has been appointed to the Baker Diocese of Oregon.
Trump threatens Russia for peace in 50 days.
And in international news, the French people are celebrating Bastille Day.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 14th, 2025. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Governor Tina Kotek has declared emergency drought conditions in two counties, Baker and Lincoln County. The two counties, being on opposite sides of the state, both saw drought conditions as early as May this year. The declaration of emergency allows the two counties access to exceptional drought-related assistance from the state, such as emergency water use permits and water transfers. Curtis Peets, a response planner for the Oregon Department of Emergency Management, said, quote, "It's one thing to say there's a drought in the community that's visible. The Drought Readiness Council is really trying to understand what are the impacts," end quote. Due to a wet winter in much of the state, no county made a drought emergency request in the spring, with Baker County's last month being the first this year. Metrics done by the U.S. Drought Monitor show that long-term drought conditions are now persistent in Baker County. Baker County is experiencing below normal precipitation, above normal temperature, dry soil conditions, water supply, and precipitation levels are not expected to improve in the short term. In Lincoln County, there has officially been a drought since the 17th of June, with metrics showing that drought conditions have been present in the last 3 to 6 months.
President Trump has announced that there will be a 50% tariff on Brazilian exports, citing the recently adopted Brazilian law that authorizes the government to take proportional countermeasures. Trump said Wednesday the U.S. will impose the tariff on imports from Brazil starting with the 1st of August. The tariff is also partly in retaliation for the prosecution of the former president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro. In a letter posted on Truth Social, Trump alleged that current Brazilian president, Luis Inácio Lula da Silva, is undertaking a, quote, witch hunt that should end immediately. Bolsonaro, who has bragged for being close with Trump, is facing trial for allegedly attempting to stage a coup against President Lula. President Lula has vowed to reciprocate if Trump follows through, stating in a post on X, quote, Brazil is a sovereign nation with independent institutions. It will not accept any form of tutelage, end quote. This marks the first time in months after another country has threatened to match Trump's tariff threats. Trump has also sent letters to 21 other countries threatening tariffs this week, but unlike those countries, the U.S. ran a $6.8 billion trade surplus with Brazil last year, meaning the U.S. exported more goods than it imported from there. Despite Trump's disagreement with Bolsonaro, with the Bolsonaro trial, he wrote that, quote, there will be no tariffs in Brazil or companies within that country decide to build or manufacture products within the U.S. Bolsonaro, often dubbed, quote, the Trump of the tropics, along with dozens of associates, have been charged with an attempt of a coup d'etat, which prosecutors allege involved a plan to assassinate the elected President Lula. Bolsonaro has denied any wrongdoing.
Pope Leo has appointed a new bishop for the Baker Diocese. That will be the youngest bishop leading a U.S. diocese, which covers about 67,000 square miles of Oregon. The bishop, Thomas Hennen, was appointed on July 10th by Pope Leo and is praised for leading a LGBTQ-friendly ministry. Hennen backs the current Catholic Church doctrine on LGBTQ issues, saying, quote, we should not feel forced into choosing between truth and love. The truth is ultimately loving. Hennen is widely considered a win for greater inclusion in the church he ministered in Davenport, Iowa, the guidelines instructing the local churches to love first, listen for understanding, and have a fundamental respect for the dignity of every human person, body and soul. Several LGBTQ advocates and groups praised the guidelines as well as assisted in consulting Hennen, who did not have final say, but assisted as bishop with them. Hennen succeeds retiring Bishop Liam Carey, who wrote in early 2024 that blessings for, quote, irregular situations such as couples living together outside of marriage or gay couples could not, quote, be carried out scandal-free in the Diocese of Baker, end quote.
The Oregon Health Authority has identified mosquitoes carrying the West Nile virus in Little Valley in Malheur County. Most people infected do not become sick. Only about 1 in 5 experience flu-like symptoms for a few days to several weeks. These symptoms include a fever over 100 degrees, severe headaches, stiff neck, mental confusion, muscle weakness, shaking, paralysis, and rashes. The OHA urges people that develop these symptoms to seek immediate medical attention, as it can sometimes lead to serious illness or death, particularly in those with weaker immune systems. OHA also states that there are no vaccines or medicines to treat West Nile in people. The OHA also recommends these tips to prevent bites from mosquitoes. Apply insect repellent to exposed skin. It is recommended to get products containing DEET, oil of lemon eucalyptus, also known as picaridin, weather permitting. Wear long-sleeve shirts and long pants outdoors. Place mosquito netting over infant carriers when outdoors. Consider staying indoors at dawn and dusk, which are peak biting times. And install or repair window and door screens so mosquitoes cannot get indoors. The OHA stated that 21 mosquito pools tested positive for the virus, mostly in eastern and southern Oregon.
FEMA's Texas flood response gets more criticism for unanswered calls. Attorneys for Kilmar Abrego Garcia want guidance about a potential second deportation, and new polls show not as many Americans are worried about the state of democracy. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It's hard to believe the devastation. Trees that are 100 years old just ripped out of the ground. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen a lot of bad ones. I've gone to a lot of hurricanes, a lot of tornadoes. I've never seen anything like this.
President Donald Trump touring the devastation in Central Texas after historic flooding on July 4th. But new reports show the Federal Emergency Management Agency failed to answer thousands of calls from survivors. The Homeland Security Department let go call center employees July 5th when their contracts expired. In a cost-cutting measure, contracts over $100,000 have to get approval from Secretary Kristi Noem. The FEMA contracts were renewed after having lapsed for 5 days. Attorneys for Kilmar Abrego Garcia are working to protect him from a second deportation. The Maryland man was one of nearly 300 accused of gang ties and taken to a notorious prison in El Salvador. Now back in the U.S., he faces criminal charges, but one of his lawyers says they're afraid he could be deported before that case is heard. And Simon Sandoval Moschenberg says Abrego Garcia could face grave threats if deported because he's accused of being an MS-13.
There are many, many countries in which he might well suffer persecution on that grounds. In addition, it's unclear whatever country he would be sent to, whether he would be even at liberty in that country or whether he would be incarcerated.
Federal judges have slowed or halted parts of the Trump administration's immigration agenda. A federal judge in Los Angeles just stopped California immigration arrests initiated solely because of race. Enforcement in the state continues to spark angry protests. In a separate ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the administration could move ahead with deporting migrants to countries they aren't from. Democratic lawmakers visited Alligator Alcatraz, a new Florida immigration detention center, after being temporarily denied entry for what Homeland Security called safety concerns. Florida Democratic Representative Maxwell Frost describes the conditions inside as barbaric and says elected officials will need to keep up the pressure.
We actually heard reports from many immigrants within the facility that said, well, yesterday out of nowhere, they let us take a shower. They hadn't let us take a shower all week. Yesterday out of nowhere, the food got a little better than it's been before. And of course, all of this is in connection to the tour we were doing.
He says one problem is officials seem to be intentionally ambiguous about who's in charge there. Though it's a federally commissioned facility, the state is slated to run it. But Frost and the other lawmakers report seeing private third-party security contractors doing most of the work. When asked, the security officer said their orders came from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. New polls show 75% of Americans feel democracy is threatened and see political violence as a growing problem. More than half of all people surveyed across party lines feel there is a serious threat to American democracy, but that's actually down from 2 years ago, in part because Republicans feel there was a larger threat to democracy when Joe Biden was president. Associate Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson says the state of democracy keeps her up at night.
I am really very interested in getting people to focus and to invest and to pay attention to what is happening in our country and in our government.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for the KBOO News in Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be roughly 67 degrees with wind gusts up to 18 miles per hour. Look for an overnight low temperature of 60 degrees. Look at a high temperature tomorrow of roughly 92 degrees. And later in the week, the National Weather Service has issued a heat advisory for the Portland metropolitan area from noon Tuesday to 10 p.m. on Wednesday. We could see a high temperature midweek at 100 degrees. Today in history, on this day in 1789, a mob advanced on the Bastille in Paris, demanding the arms and munitions stored there. But when the guards resisted, the crowd captured the prison, an act that symbolized the end of the Ancien regime and the beginning of the French Revolution. The quote of the day is from Maximilien Robespierre, a leader of the French Revolution who fought for equality and virtuous ideals, representing poor clients in his tenure as lawyer, fighting against slavery, and fighting for universal suffrage, said, quote, "The secret of freedom lies in educating people, whereas the secret of tyranny is keeping them ignorant," End quote.
Rural health care in Fallon Paiute Shoshone Nation of Nevada improves thanks to a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Fallon Paiute Shoshone tribe is expanding health care access with a mobile clinic in Nevada. The Mountain West News Bureau's Kayla Bradle has more on how it's getting tribal patients the health care they need.
After years of driving their vehicles to neighboring reservations, the tribe bought a mobile clinic last year. It was funded by a $673,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, aimed at expanding rural healthcare access after the pandemic. The tribe's mobile clinic serves its members and drives to the Lovelock Paiute and Yamba Shoshone reservations, covering a territory of about 200 miles. It can also treat any member of a tribe in Nevada. John Pichon is the director of the Fallon Tribal Health Center. Pichon says they serve about 2,000 people, averaging about 20 patients each month. They try to visit each tribe at least once a month, but that isn't always easy.
Challenges is weather and distance. They are far away, and during winter, sometimes these areas get a little hard to access.
Mobile health clinics are also being used by the Navajo Nation, the White Mountain Apache tribe in Arizona, and the Fort Peck tribes in Montana.
I think having the providers go into community open their eyes to the needs and how to better serve them.
Dr. Christopher Chai is working at the mobile clinic here in Lovelock. He says they can even act as an urgent care for injuries and wounds.
We will get the random rancher come in with a broken finger and say, like, what do I do with this? Sliced open, and we can put in stitches.
Pichon adds that the clinic also helps tribal members be proactive instead of reactive about their health.
We have some people that maybe only come in when they're sick, but now they're seeing us for their preventative care when we come out.
Like Barbara Bonta, an elder of the Walker River Paiute tribe who lives in Lovelock.
I've been seeing them for my feet and other problems that I didn't know I had until they start testing this and that.
Bonta was brought to the mobile clinic by her daughter, Tia Happy.
With my mom, she can't sit for a long time, you know, in a car to go to Fallon or elsewhere to appointments, so it makes it super convenient to have it here when the mobile comes here.
Happy says her mom's been seeing Dr. Chai for the past 2 years. Consistent care that's been made possible by this mobile clinic, which isn't slowing down. This year, the clinic plans to add dental care to its services. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs announced last week the launch of the Turquoise Alert System for Missing Native Americans. It's a new tool intended to help the state's Department of Public Safety and law enforcement respond when vulnerable people go missing. In May, Hobbs signed legislation creating the alert. It was deployed before its effective date this fall. Hobbs says the tool is a meaningful step to improve the safety and well-being of communities across Arizona, and in particular, tribal communities, which have suffered from a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Tribal leaders were among those to advocate for the alert system. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Ralewis took to social media to announce the launch of the Turquoise Alert, saying it's in honor of Emily Pike, a San Carlos Apache teenager who went missing and was later found dead.
I feel the weight of every story of a missing loved one. Now, the creation of the Turquoise Alert System through Emily's Law is deeply meaningful to me and to all tribal communities across Arizona. We have long lived with the painful reality that our Indigenous brothers and sisters, our relatives, go missing at alarming rates and too often slip through the cracks of systems not built to protect them.
Governor Lewis says the Turquoise Alert gives tribal communities a fighting chance to bring their relatives home. The alert will be activated when a person goes missing under unexplained or suspicious circumstances and is believed to be endangered. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Earlier last week, Mount Rainier experienced hundreds of small, nearly imperceptible earthquakes, reminding Western Washington residents they live near the largest stratovolcano in the Cascade Mountain Range. The swarm of earthquakes continued into Friday with the largest quake so far, measured at 2.3 at 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning, as reported by the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. This is the largest swarm of earthquakes since a similar three-day event in 2009, some 15 years ago. The U.S. Geologic Survey posted on its USGS Volcano social media site that, quote, earthquake swarms are relatively common at Mount Rainier, typically occurring 1 to 2 times per year, but usually with many fewer events that have been detected so far during the current swarm, end quote. The USGS says the current seismic activity is attributed to a circulation of fluids among the pre-existing faults beneath the volcano and considered background activity at Mount Rainier. To date, the flurry of earthquake activity is too small to be felt at the surface. There is no cause for concern, say officials at the Cascades Volcano Observatory, or CVO, who monitors the volcanoes across the Pacific Northwest. In spite of the increased seismic activity, USGS and CVO officials say the volcano's alert levels remain at normal and the aviation color code is green. They say there is no current indication that the swarm of earthquakes is associated with the movement of magma. The USGS went on to say Mount Rainier has not significantly erupted over the last 500 years.
The push to diminish the amount of construction waste heading to the landfill gets the spotlight with a more climate-friendly method to deconstruct buildings. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a wrecking ball demolishes a building, the debris is typically sent to a landfill. But by carefully deconstructing buildings instead, builders could reuse many of the old materials in new construction. In addition to reducing landfill waste, that would limit the energy needed to make and transport new materials, benefiting the climate. Fope Batamosi is with the company Autodesk's research division. She says builders could salvage more than just easily removable pieces like doors and windows. She recently studied how to reuse gypsum drywall.
The United States alone generates approximately 13 million tons of gypsum wallboard debris annually, and 85% typically end up in the landfill.
Batamosi and her colleagues use cameras, sensors, and thermal imaging to look inside a wall and spot flaws like cracks to determine what's reusable and how to remove the drywall. She says the process takes more effort, but could save builders money on disposal and materials.
We simply cannot address climate change effectively without changing how we approach construction, deconstruction, and construction materials and waste.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Donald Trump announced today that he would punish Russia with tariffs if there isn't a deal to end the war in Ukraine within 50 days. He made the announcement during an Oval Office meeting with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. Trump said, quote, we're going to be very severe. Trump said, quote, we're going to be doing very severe tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. He added they would be secondary. Tariffs, meaning if they would target Russia's trading partners. The announcement marked a major shift by Trump and appeared to be intended to increase the U.S. pressure on Moscow. Trump has promised to end the war in Ukraine quickly, but has increasingly expressed frustration with Russian President Vladimir Putin in the absence of a true ceasefire. Trump said, quote, I'm disappointed in President Putin because I thought we would have a deal in 2 months ago, but it doesn't seem to get there, end quote. Trump also said Putin is a, quote, tough guy who has fooled a lot of people over the years, but he didn't fool me, end quote. Finally, he said he is weary of fruitless negotiations and that he wants action and results. Yesterday, Trump also announced the U.S. would sell Patriot missiles to European allies who could then send those arms to Ukraine. Trump insisted that Europe would pay for it all, but didn't furnish a lot of details underlying such a mechanism.
Trump reverses a decision to pause Ukraine aid, claiming he didn't even take part in it and that it was the Pentagon's work without his approval. With that story, it's KBOO's intrepid David Chittenden.
2 weeks ago, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered a pause in shipments of lethal aid to Ukraine, stating concerns about the U.S. military stockpiles. The weapons and ammunition included were Patriot interceptors that can defend against missiles, Hellfire missiles, and munitions for anti-air and artillery systems. After a NATO meeting at The Hague last week, President Trump said that the U.S. is trying to find Patriot air defense missiles to send to Ukraine. Trump stated, quote, "They do want to have the anti-missile missiles. You know they're very hard to get. We need them too," end quote. President Trump took an about-face on this movement earlier last week, claiming that he doesn't know who approved the halt on supplying lethal aid. Trump continues to dodge questions, last Tuesday pushing back against a reporter saying, quote, "I don't know, why don't you tell me," end quote. The original decision to halt aid was driven by the policy chief of the Pentagon, Elbridge Colby. Trump reversing this move also comes as he ramps up criticism of President Vladimir Putin. After learning of the pause, Trump ordered Hegseth to restart the shipments of at least some of the munitions, afterwards downplaying his role in the decision to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in a call. Trump stated last Tuesday, after being questioned on how such a major decision could be made without him knowing, he suggested no such action was made in the first place. Trump stated, quote, "I would know if a decision was made. I will know. I'll be the first to know. In fact, most likely I'd give the order, but I haven't done that yet," end quote. The action of sending aid will also be the first time in Trump's second time in office using presidential power, sending around $300 million worth of weaponry to Ukraine.
Today is Bastille Day, a national holiday in France that marks the fall of the Bastille in Paris. Originally built as a fortress, it became a state prison and became a symbol of the French rule of the Bourbon monarchy. In 1789, a mob approached the Bastille, demanding the weapons and munitions stored there, and when the guards resisted, the mob stormed the prison, releasing the seven prisoners, including the infamous Marquis de Sade. The Bastille was taken, which signaled the beginning of the French Revolution and symbolizing the end of the Ancien Regime.
The WHO is urging a rollout of a breakthrough HIV drug that only needs to be injected twice a year to offer near total protection from the virus and development of AIDS. The drug, known as LEN, L-E-N for short, is a highly effective, long-acting antiretroviral alternative to pills and other shorter-acting options. WHO's support for the drug is significant because the prevention efforts of HIV are stagnating around the world. To make it easier for people to receive the injection, the UN also recommends rapid testing kits. Although access to the LEN injection remains limited outside of clinical trials, the WHO is urging government donors and partners incorporate LEN immediately. Rather, partners to incorporate LEN immediately with combination of programs.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is David Chittenden and Josh Salem. The producer is David Chittenden, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Edwin G. Vieira, and Anthony Lizowitz. The intern for the evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member, and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for a KBOO News In-Depth.
KBOO News In-Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In-Depth. Why did the U.S. end up bombing Iran? U.S. and Israeli leaders said it was because Iran was about to build a nuclear weapon. But many analysts, including those in the U.S. intelligence community, don't believe that to be true. Nader Hashemi is an associate professor of the Middle East and Islamic politics and the director of the Al-Walid Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University. KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with him about what was behind the attack on Iran.
Why now? Why would the U.S. choose to pick this moment to bomb Iran? Was it just a matter of political opportunity, or was it just that Netanyahu managed to convince Trump that now was the right time? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think both of those things. I think fundamentally, the U.S.-Israeli bombing of Iran at this moment was a byproduct of political opportunity. In other words, Iran right now is incredibly weak as a state, as a country, as a political system. It's lost most of its regional allies, Hezbollah, particularly Hamas, and it's a country.
Has it lost them, or are they just a little decimated right now?
Well, they're decimated. You know, I think they're not going to recover anytime soon. I mean, what Israel is doing in Gaza has really